ahead and take the speed up your number one now, runway 27 clear to land green dot. Welcome to Oshkosh, guys.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Green Dot, EAA's podcast for anyone and everyone who loves aviation. The Green Dot is proudly sponsored by Crew Chief Systems. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Henry. I'm the museum director here out in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And across the table from me is my partner in crime,
Tom Charpentier, government relations director.
And Tom, we're having a little bit of an East Coast takeover this morning. You were, of course, born and raised out in Connecticut. Born and raised in Pittsburgh, and our guest is currently a pilot out on that eastern seaboard here. We're talking about Cape Air and their interesting operation, and we have the assistant chief pilot Dave Zarella with us. Dave, welcome to the Green Dot.
Hey, thanks, guys. Chris, Tom.
Hey.
All right. So my favorite question I have to ask everybody is, what first got you interested in wanting to fly?
Oh yeah. So of course I was kind of one of those run-of-the-mill. You know, 5-year-olds looking at the airplanes, just fascinated. We have a very interesting layout with Northeast airports. They're kind of in the middle of towns. Tom, you might know about this. Yeah, with just densely populated, and all of a sudden there's an airport, and you're driving down the road, and whoa, you see the tails of these jets, and it's just fascinating. Just seeing the airplanes and then watching them take off. And of course, I was born the same year Top Gun came out, kind of a coincidence, seeing that movie, and just really fascinated by the way the airplanes fly and how things in aviation work.
Yeah, I believe the term in government relations we have for that is incompatible land use. definitely leads to some neighbor issues, but yes, absolutely. For those of us airplane geeks, it gets us started early. Yeah.
Well, Dave, tell us a little about your journey. How did you go, about getting your license and going out to fly?
Yeah, so it's like I said, I had that early bug of aviation, and my parents gave me a very generous gift of basically a discovery flight, kind of the manuals and everything to get you started on your private pilot knowledge and things like that. I was about 12 years old, going on 13, and got a little discovery flight out in North Central Airport in Smithfield, Rhode Island. And just took a flight in a small airplane and was really kind of nervous at first, but was like, this is something. It's definitely feeling a little type of way about actually being in the air kind of under your own hand. And went through high school, did a couple lessons after that that first one, but didn't really have the funds to kind of keep it going. But during a high school college fair toward the end of junior senior year, they had Daniel Webster College up in Nashua, New Hampshire, and they had an aviation flight program, and I was like, wow, look at that. And wound up doing that right after high school, getting my private pilot soloed at a little over 18 years old and 2004, and got my private pilot in 2005. Basically took a school year. Kind of in the halfway point of that, realized that was also expensive. So kind of a recurring theme. So I went back home to Rhode Island and finished my instrument commercial and multi down there. Just kind of was hoping to get maybe a CFI, ran out of money in the middle of that. So another recurring theme of that. But so there was an opportunity to work for the airlines. I had my first job was at a restaurant, and one of the general managers was of Spirit Airlines in Providence, Rhode Island, was one of our regulars. So I got my opportunity to, while I was working on my licenses, work at the airport in TF Green near Warwick, Rhode Island. And got to kind of get the back shop, so to speak, of how the airlines work, checking in passengers, doing the operations and gate stuff, driving the jetway and fun stuff like that at the airport. And then we got laid off because the station closed down. And a few of my friends went over to Cape Air, and the next year they were hiring summer help, and got to have another opportunity to step in the airline world again with a very unique operation. Cape Air is we fly Cessna 402s. We exclusively flew them at the time. Now we fly Cessna 402s, Britain, Norman Islanders, and Tectum P-2012 Travelers. But at the time, I was able to really cut my teeth to work in the ramp and checking in passengers again, loading bags on those small airplanes and fueling them up, really kind of getting down and dirty in the aviation world. And then finally, they after about 8 years or 7 or 8 years doing that, they came out with what's called the Internal Gateway Program for guys like me that kind of hit a stop block in their hours, had a few hundred hours, and my commercial multi-instrument just kind of sitting there. And after kind of 6 years away from flying, got to be a first officer, got to train up as a first officer, and then just build my hours up to the 135 PIC minimums, and then was able to fly the mail by myself in a high-performance twin, which is pretty cool. Did that between Hyatt and Nantucket for a while, and then later got my ATP in 2017. And yeah, in between all that time, I was also in the Air National Guard and tried to do that. And it was kind of the good timing. It was, I went into the Air National Guard as a maintainer, and then tried to apply to the pilot board and was told I was too old. So that was 2014 and 2015, the Internal Gateway Program that I just talked about came out. So it was really good timing. Pretty much every roadblock, it was kind of, you know, not too long lived. Something came along that, all right, now I could seize on this other opportunity of getting to fly. Still in the Air National Guard and actually on a deployment, this job came up, the assistant chief pilot, after so long of working from the ground up, literally working my way in the system as a captain at the time from 2017, flying around the system, being really involved with the pilot group. And that opportunity came up in 2023. And I've been doing that ever since October 23. So doing this job, kind of, you know, little less flying now, you know, doing the office stuff, but still really involved in, you know, a lot of the people that have stuck around this company for years and years, get to work with them in so many different capacities, from fueling their planes back in the day to, you know, flying with them and working in the operations in our headquarters here in Cape Cod.
Well, you just gave us a lot to unpack, which is awesome. Yeah. And I want to talk about the Internal Gateway Program eventually, because that I think is really, really something pretty special. But I do want to touch on the fact that, you know, I don't think it's something we ever really talked about on the show, but, you know, the folks work the ramp are rampies. I'm a former rampie. I worked for US Air in Pittsburgh doing that. There's something special about that job. I can't put my finger on it, but but that it's just a cool job no matter where you are. There's just some, I don't know, it makes you more of a gritty person or something, or a hardy person. But I absolutely loved it when I did it. It at the time I didn't realize how cool it was. And then maybe sometimes I think maybe I did, but it's a special job though.
100%. Yeah, it was really, you know, you're outside. You're just kind of in the raw environment of it all, the noise and the elements. Really cool.
Absolutely. You have a great tan in the summer, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But how special is it that you guys have that Internal Gateway Program at Cape Air? That is really cool.
Yeah, it's very good. It's kind of calmed down. We have our have a big pilot group that's mostly fed through Lyft Academy now for most of our first officers. But that the timing of that Internal Gateway was really perfect. There's been a few people that have gone through. They actually help some of the folks get the rest of their ratings. So kind of get them across the finish line. Like I said, for me, I had my ratings, but was just short on flight time. It was just kind of stuck. And it's really cool that the company you work for, you kind of fell in love with the like you said, the grittiness and just really down and dirty with the other parts of the operation, to finally fulfill that dream to fly is, you know, with the same company is really something. And really gonna, you know, tip my hat to the folks in the leadership here that put that program together, and are still, you know, this is, you know, 10 years ago, kind of trying to revive it as best they can, because it's really, really a good source of the company culture. It's set in with these folks, and they already know the operation, obviously. So it's a really good fit for someone kind of fulfilling their dream and being loyal members of the company.
Yeah, it's interesting, because you hear stories, or you hear about programs like that at a lot of, like, you know, like, I don't know if bush flying is the right word, but you know, like small air operations up in Alaska and up in Canada. I think, you know, Chris, we had your good friend Mikey McBrien on the podcast a couple of years ago, and I think they have something similar. But you don't hear it too much, you know, just at a airline, you know, headquartered out of Cape Cod and flying into Boston and stuff like that. It's kind of a little bit of a backcountry flavor to operation there.
Yep, it's very cool. I always tell our new hire classes, you know, we introduce ourselves and I tell people we get to do the big airline stuff in a small package. And there's kind of a famous picture. Even if you Google Cape Air, you'll see, you know, a couple of 402s in front of a couple 737s and a wide body 777, and they're leading the pack in Boston in the line, and we're right in the mix of people that are doing international operations, wide body stuff, but they got to wait for our little 402 to take off to right. So it's great.
And I was going to ask, you know, go obviously, you know, being a pilot in the operation, and also from your experience working on the ramp, what is it like loading an airliner? It's scheduled service. Where the weight and balance actually kind of matters in terms of how you load it.
Yep. Yeah. So it's the way the baggage compartment is, you know, the Cessna 402 is at least a little, it's kind of naturally tail heavy. So you just get taught to load the bags from front to back in like a big, surprisingly big baggage compartment in the nose that can fit a good amount of stuff. And I got the Cessna bites, they call it, to prove it on my hands. They just, you know, get down and dirty loading that up. And, you're calling in weights, and then the pilot at the time, they'll load it up into basically like an Excel program that was developed to put it in there. And then the Technomax 3 has its own weight and balance program, but very kind of down and dirty with the numbers, kind of making sure you're maybe got to take some bags out of here and put it there. We call it manual seating, that we have assigned seats all of a sudden. Sometimes it's maybe if you get four or five people, it's like, okay, as long as the last row is empty, the weight and balance will be good. And other times it's a full plane, you're going to have to assign people seats. And that's always fun for the passengers. All right. And maybe who's going to win the lottery of sitting next to the pilot on the Cessna 402? It's a really good time.
Well, that's something else I was going to bring up is, unlike I think almost any other air carrier that I'm familiar with, you know, the passengers are sometimes sitting in the right seat or certainly right in there with you, even in the main cabin. I mean, that's a pretty unique experience.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So we tell our pilots, that our prospective pilots that are interviewing, be like, hey, just a heads up, there is not even a curtain between the so-called flight deck and the passengers. So you're right there with them. You just turn around, and that's where you're given your safety briefing. You're the pilot, you're the flight attendant, you're everything. Really cool. That's part of the appeal over here. We get some regulars out of some of our stations, so you get to know each other on first name basis. Hey, Pete. Hey, Dave. How's it going? Yeah, going to work today. And then you get folks that it's maybe their first time ever on a plane this size, and they just came from London on British Airways, and the last part of their journey is maybe sitting next to the pilot on this little 45-minute flight to Nantucket. It's really great, and it's probably one of the best parts of the job. Kind of what keeps me around. Part of one of the many things that keeps me around is being able to, you know, really interact with our customers, kind of have real-time feedback of the customer satisfaction. Oh yeah, no, there's a great landing. Or even if the weather's tough, hey, thanks for getting us there. You know, it's really rewarding.
So speaking of tough, the weather has to be pretty challenging sometimes in that part of the country.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's getting to be the kind of just perfect time of year where it's might have to deal with some icing, and then we get the pop-up last minute showers that'll, you know, make things interesting. Starts getting a little bumpy, a little windy, everything all at once. And we can't really climb over much. We can go around some, we kind of just gotta make our decisions and do pilot stuff. It's really every day we're doing, whether it's, you know, beautiful VFR day or those days where the weather's gonna come in, maybe we're gonna take a different route or plan on you know, altitudes, things like that to set us up for success in the weather. But it really makes you a totally proficient instrument pilot 100% when you come here.
So you talked a little bit about your passengers, and sometimes you get to know your regulars and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about the operation of Cape Air? I mean, obviously, as the name suggests, and I guess you're most famous for operating around Cape Cod, but that's mm-hmm. not the limits of your operation by any means, right?
Yeah, that's not it. We have three regions. So we have of course the Cape Cod region, New England region. That's our biggest hub is, of course, Boston Logan Airport. Our headquarters are here in Hyannis, Massachusetts, on Cape Cod. Our very first route was Provincetown to Boston. We basically turned up to maybe 6 hour summer drive into a 20-minute flight, and it kind of just grew from there. We do serve six areas: Boston North, between upstate New York and New Hampshire and Maine and Vermont. We do, of course, the Cape and Islands, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard. But we also have the Montana region, which the hub over there is Billings. And we go to five really rural spots over there. That's a really good operation over there. Sometimes people are getting to their medical appointments in Billings. There's no other way to really get there other than either like an 8 hour drive or hop on one of our planes, a little over an hour to get to Billings. And then one of our other mainstays is the Caribbean. That's going to be ramping up, of course, soon with the Caribbean high season down there. Main hub is San Juan, but we kind of have a mini hub going in St. Thomas, going to the Virgin Islands and other parts of Puerto Rico and some other small independent nations. We actually just started a service to St. Bart's recently.
Wow. So all over. And I know some of your operations are essential air service. Like is the Montana route, is that EAS?
Yes. Yeah. Pretty much all of Montana and all of the Boston North stuff.
So can you tell us a little bit about what EAS is? Maybe some of our listeners aren't familiar.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's the essential air service. It's basically a government subsidized program to help these small communities that don't really have the best way to get to a hub, like Boston or at least a Billings that has a larger airline service that can get to the rest of the country. And Cape Air is really, really set up perfectly for that. Cause we have just enough seats that, we're not going to have a whole bunch of empty airplanes flying around. And we can kind of go into these small communities, really easily. It's, some of these areas, a jet probably wouldn't even be able to land there. But we're perfectly set up to go in there. And it's kind of a lot of general aviation airports, untowered fields. And we get to do the mix of that. We'll be on one minute. We'll be in the Bravo in Boston, getting out of there. And then the next thing you know, we're in Bar Harbor, Maine or Rockland, Maine, in an untowered field doing our regular little CTAF call outs. But yeah, we're really perfectly set up for stuff like that. Very agile in our operations and really good, stewards of the taxpayer dollars with the EAS program.
Yeah, as I understand, the EAS was kind of the compromise after airline deregulation, where a lot of communities were set to lose their airline service, and this was able to keep a lot of those routes going. And yeah, like as you alluded to for your Montana routes, I mean, these might be less trafficked routes, but when you need to fly, you need to fly, mm-hmm. to get somewhere.
So yeah. I asked you about some of the maybe treacherous weather, especially I'm focusing probably mostly on flying off the East Coast here, but especially this time of year, that's got to be pretty beautiful. And from a stamp or from a viewpoint that a lot of commercial airliners don't get, cause you guys are able to operate a little lower. That's gotta be some beautiful scenery out there.
Oh yeah. It's really perfect. New England in the fall, it's getting to be the end of that foliage season really up north. But the Cape and Island still has that going. And we really do have the best view in the industry. We have probably the largest windows on each part of the airplane, but then you're also able to kind of get almost a 360 view, because you're able to see out the front and that huge window on the side. And yeah, like you said, we go down low. Really, the the highest we could really fly for a duration is maybe 10,000 feet, but our average, we're maybe between 5,000 and 8,000 feet. Really perfect, perfect vantage point to see a lot, but also get the detail down low. It's really, really, really cool.
So when you're flying out of, and this is just something that always fascinated me, because I learned to fly in the Boston area, and I saw you guys operating out of Logan. What is that like operating, a medium-sized twin Cessna, out of one of the busiest airports in the Northeast?
Oh yeah, it's very interesting being kind of threading the needle, putting yourself in the mix. You know, maybe lined up next to a heavy that's on the parallel runway. It's the kind of overall theme is to kind of go fast responsibly. So we might have to bump our power up to maybe our climb power setting just to keep up with the flow kind of on the final, setting up for final. And then we get to, kind of be in this small window that we're going fast. And then, okay, we're ready to slow down. We have our checklist to go through. And we're able to kind of slow down quick because that kind of instantaneous power that we get with the prop kind of helps us out. If we got to go around, we can go around nice and quick. But yeah, we're also able to dump on the gear and pull back the power and slow down, and then we're instantly in our landing configuration, and just kind of threading the needle right next to the jet that's on final with us. We're keeping up right until the end, and we have our ramp that's kind of right in the mix. It's in Terminal C in Boston, and we're right in the middle of JetBlue and Southwest and all those folks. So it's really interesting, especially when you were just on Nantucket, nice and nice and calm. It's a couple runways, no big deal, and then you're going fast, you're doing your thing, and really heading the game, and finally on the ground in Boston with all that traffic.
This is a very specific question that is only for the benefit of our listeners that know the layout of Logan. Are you using that? Is that kind of the Cape Air runway that kind of east west? Was it like about a 3,000-4,000 foot runway on the north side of the field there?
Oh yeah, so it's 15 left, 3 through right. We do use that. It's it was also used, I think, folks like Plain Sense or any other small onesie twosie operators that would go in. That's kind of there. We call it the carrier landing sometimes. it's about a 2,500 foot long runway. And, so then when they're using the long runway 33 left, we'll be using that a lot in the winter. Cause there's just the way that the winds go, toward that season. We'll be set up kind of on the parallel, and we'll sneak in, kind of do a little yank and bank, cause we have to avoid overflying 27 when they're using that runway. We practice for that, and it's really cool kind of having that be our exclusive runway.
Okay, so my compass is a little off. It's more of a north-south runway, but yeah, take a look at if you're not familiar with it and you're listening here, take a look at the layout of Logan sometime. There's a little runway there that looks like it has no business being at a major air carrier airport.
Yep.
The stories we have today are really interesting, but before we go any further, I do want to take a moment to acknowledge our sponsor. They are some of the people who helped make the Green Dot possible, and that is Crew Chief Systems. Are you still relying on paper logs or manual spreadsheets to manage your aircraft? It's time to elevate your approach. Crew Chief Systems puts your airplane at the center of real-time aircraft asset intelligence, allowing you to fly safer, save time, and protect your aircraft's value. Crew Chief's intuitive platform unifies all of your maintenance, compliance, and operational data, giving you instant access to your aircraft's full history, upcoming requirements, and real-time insights directly from your mobile device or computer. Whether you're a pilot, fleet manager, or mechanic, Crew Chief Systems helps you stay compliant, make smarter decisions, and keep your aircraft in peak condition. Visit crewchiefsystems.com to see how you can modernize your aircraft management. And as a special thank you to Green Dot listeners, you can save 15% for the lifetime of your Crew Chief GA subscription when you use coupon code GREEN15. That's GREEN15 at crewchiefsystems.com.
Thank you again so much to Crew Chief Systems for sponsoring the Green Dot and helping make it possible. Now let's get back to the rest of the story.
So, full disclosure, I first became aware of Cape Air from a little TV show called Wings. You know, not going to lie, from Pittsburgh, so we didn't have your service there. But loved that TV show when it was on. And I'm saying that because the TV show focused on two brothers that ran an airline with the twin Cessna. I believe it was one of your twin Cessnas that stood in for the airplane. And
yes, it was.
And then I was shocked when recently my co-host here, Tom, got married and actually flew out for the wedding. That was my first time in the area. Your operation is not two brothers running an airline with one Cessna. It is quite massive. Out of the New England, you know, area, and then I guess two-part question. What first out of the New England area, and then two throughout all of your operations. How many flights a day does Cape Air have?
Oh, geez. Let's see. I believe, so we serve six areas north of Boston. Those each have 2 to 3 flights a day going in and out of Boston. And then we have, in the high season, in the summer, we'll have just out of Boston, maybe 120 flights.
Wow.
Going all over the place, a lot of Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard. But we'll have in the hundreds of operations going in and out of Boston in the high season in the summer.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Yep. So not going to lie, as a pop culture nerd, I totally geeked out when I was in Boston. We flew into Boston to go up to Maine, and I literally had my wife take a picture of the sign in the terminal that says Cape Air, like this way, like, because I was so geeked out about it. So, and then speaking of that, I got to go up to Maine for Tom's ceremony and drink some downtime. Got to go over to Rockland, meet your staff. Got to go out and get a photo with one of your airplanes, which was really a nerd out moment. I treasure that photo even more than the photos of Tom's actual wedding. But all joking aside, though, your Rockland staff was just amazing. I mean, it's the only staff I really got to interact with on that trip. But really, really great ambassadors of your airline. And I understand that Cape Air has a motto, right?
Yes. And that Rockland staff is awesome. I was personally based there for a summer in 2018. And I can personally attest to how great just that whole operation was really cool. The motto is Mocha Hagati. It stands for make our customers happy and have a good time doing it.
That's awesome. I love it. When you guys make t-shirts, I want to get in line to get one of those.
Oh yeah.
I have to be the only guy in Wisconsin rocking a Cape Air sticker on the back of his Jeep, by the way. So
oh, there you go.
Gotta thank Rebecca on your staff. She's awesome.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you have a favorite route that you have flown? Is there one place that you just love to fly to the most?
Oh, geez. Like I said, Rockland in the summer was really great because that season, really good in the coastal Maine, when it was really nice, got to kind of go down low about, once we were out of the Bravo, got to go down low about 1500 feet and just kind of cruise the coast. And that was some of the best flying out there. And then of course, when the fall comes, the foliage and the scenery over there, still excellent. Boston's Saranac Lake was really great. Also did Saranac Lake to down to JFK. That's big operation that we did down there. And then of course, pretty much every bit of flying in the Caribbean I've done, it's almost like you forget you're working down there. you're flying around the Caribbean islands. It's gorgeous out. It looks like a movie, and it's really nice.
Well, Chris, I think you spilled the beans a little bit. Yeah, hey everybody, I got married a couple weeks ago. But,
congratulations, Tom.
I was actually going to ask. So we talk about how much of a unique operation Cape Air is, and the airline hiring space right now being what it is. I know people are moving around a lot, but you must have quite a few veterans that just stick around, just because of the operation, right? What is kind of the makeup of your pilot group between, people coming up and the seasoned vets?
Yeah, we have a good mix. We have a program with Lyft Academy. That's pretty much the primary source of our first officers, and then eventually captain upgrades. So they have kind of like a set timeline. They move on to Republic Airways after a certain amount of time. We also have worked with OMS, which is a setting up folks for out of foreign countries to sponsorship to work in the U.S. Very limited program, kind of very competitive for them. They've come from a background where they might have tens of thousands of hours flying for a foreign carrier. And then we have our folks that kind of grew with the company, like myself, or folks that were just local to the area at the time, and they started the operation. They were there almost since the start of the operation. And then we have also our gray gulls, we call them. So in the 135 world, you can keep flying until you're done with your medical or you decide to hang it up. But of course, in the 121 airline world, you have to get out when you're 65. So we have some of our folks that have retired from the airlines and still want to fly. They're not ready to hang it up. And they come to our 135 operation. They can keep flying and not hang their wings up quite yet.
Oh, that's great. So that brings up a question. And again, this is a regulatory question. I'm the regulatory nerd here. So are you 121, scheduled 135, or a mix of both?
We are a scheduled 135.
Okay. Which is a lot of small carriers are like that, especially like Alaska and things like that. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
The one question I had is, we touched on, of course, our pilots and aviators, which you have to, that's what we're about. We did at least shine some light on those who work the ramp, which we don't really always get to do. But can you tell us a little bit about your mechanics and things that keep the airplanes flying? That's got to be a little bit different keeping, the twin Cessnas going, which it just has to be a different sort of pipeline than like a 737 or something like that.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, our maintainers are great. And, coming, you're working in on the military side of maintenance, I really got an appreciation for just aircraft maintenance in general and what our guys and girls do here at Cape Air. It's like you said, keeping the Cessna 402 flying. We have an MRO program, which is basically like an overhaul. They'll be able to extend the life of the airplane by really diving in, doing some heavy maintenance, and then just the day-to-day stuff that they've been awesome throughout the year. So I make sure to, if I go to Boston, I make sure to reward them with some treats. I got to bring them some food every now and again. But yeah, they're great. And in every region too, we have, of course, our base managers in, Montana and the Caribbean, they all work, super hard to keep our fleet going. We have, a little over 90 airplanes and they keep them going.
I was going to mention, you said Montana, that we were talking about being hardy working on the ramp. You got to be pretty hardy to work out in Montana in the wintertime. That's I've been out there in the winter. That's pretty rough living.
Yep.
Well, so what does the future look like for Cape Air? I mean, you mentioned the 402s and keeping those going, but they're not making any new ones, and they're not going to keep flying forever. So what does the kind of the fleet plan look like moving forward?
Yeah, so we have about 30 of the Tectum P-2012 travelers on property. That was kind of the plan to be like the overall fleet replacement for the 402. Of course, we'll extend the 402 as long as we can, safely. And we're always looking at other avenues. Whatever we can do, it's kind of our biggest strength is agility. Whether it's what route we want to bid on to maybe fly, explore some opportunities to fly to places like St. Bart's. Our fleet is also one of those things that they're planning on. We'll take a look at the Cessna Caravans and anything that'll kind of work into our model and how we do things here. So it's pretty much anything is on the table that as long as we get that the nice 9-passenger sweet spot, because anything over, we start getting into certificate things with operations 121, all that, things like that. So yeah, whatever plane that can fit with us, we're looking at. It's too bad they don't make the Cessna 402D model. We would love that, but Cessna is done making Kama class twins.
So. Yeah. So actually, I was going to ask, you mentioned the Caravan. So turbine versus piston, pressurized versus unpressurized. Is it you guys basically don't fly high enough really to really get the most out of a turbine, right?
Yeah, not really. So that would be something that would be good for our longer routes. Pretty much all the Montana flying is, an hour and 20, almost hour and a half. Not so many cycles on the turbine engine. That would be probably the sweet spot to put those in the Montana region or something like a Saranac Lake, where our both Boston and JFK about an hour and a half flight.
So going back just to your career, wanted to hit on one question. It's something else I like to always ask people. Do you have one flight that's special to you that just stands out?
Oh man. Yes. I think so. It's a hindsight thing. So, I got to fly my parents each separate, one time. So there was my mom, wound up getting a little airsick on the way in. but after we got on the ground, she's like, oh, very impressed how you handle that. That was kind of when I was building my time, in single engine Cessnas. And this, and in 2000, I think it was around the same time, 2006 ish. And I was able to fly my dad one time. And it turns out that was the only time I was able to get to fly with him, because he suddenly passed away. So kind of looking back, being able to fly him, at least once. And, that was, that really, really special to me, looking back. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I can relate. I had one flight with my dad, lost him kind of suddenly as well, and really glad I got to take him up in a Cherokee one time. So, yep. He didn't get airsick, but I think he was questioning some of my decision-making. But
yeah, the same thing, yeah.
And I noticed, I know that you also serve in the Guard. What do you do in the Air National Guard?
Yeah, so I joined in 2010. So just hit my 15 years, joined as basically a crew chief, aircraft maintenance. Did the primary, job was in the back shop. It was called repair and reclamation, kind of down and dirty maintenance, wheel and tire buildups, and then, heavy maintenance when they would come in to the hangar to basically get torn apart and, inspected and put back together again. It's a C-130J is out in the Rhode Island Air National Guard at, Quonset Point, really cool airplane. So really get to, have fun trying to learn how to turn some wrenches on those. And a few years later, got to move to the maintenance operations center. So got to kind of work on the other side, the back of the house, a little more office work. But after doing some maintenance, kind of being able to appreciate that for a while. Now I've been doing that ever since. Deployed both as a crew chief for a little bit, and then did a couple deployments as MOC, we call it, Maintenance Operations Center.
Wow, that's cool. Thank you for your service as well, and thank you to the rest of the folks in your squadron. That proud to have them serving for us here.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been great having this conversation. I got to say, you keep mentioning places that that are near and dear to my heart, and I keep biting my tongue because this is not the Tom show. This is the Green Diner.
You gotta let it go, Tom.
I was gonna mention I had my check right at North Central. So,
oh, very cool.
That's,
yeah,
that's definitely very close to me. But
I got a hard hitting question here.
Go for it.
I can't have you on here without asking. All right, lobster rolls. Where's the best lobster roll for?
Oh, geez.
All right. Yeah, we stood in line at Red's, okay, down
in Wisconsin. Tourist trap, Chris. Tourist trap.
We enjoyed it.
Oh, so yeah, in Rhode Island specifically, we got we have clam cakes and chowder, kind of like the specialty, and of course calamari, and that's pretty much all over the place. Anywhere down the beach is where you can get some good seafood. Lobster rolls too. We got the two styles. You can get the Connecticut, the warm, or you can get the Maine style. We got some quality lobster in Rhode Island. I think, probably Champlin's in Rhode Island is probably one of the best spots. Pretty much the Galilee area is pretty good. And then I don't know about that. I didn't try anything from Red's. I went to, what is it? Claws in Rockland. That was a really good spot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We saw it. Yeah.
Yep.
That was fun. My wife was of the mindset that we like to do touristy stuff when we're places, and she was like, if that many people are in line, it's got to be good. So
Well, if anybody else is listening and they're going up the Route 1 corridor, I'd say Fat Boys in Brunswick, if they're open, drive in.
Nice. Oh, we got the hamburger there.
The Whopper Burger?
The Whopper Burger. For those of you who have never been up in that area, they're like, what are they talking about now? For people that travel this area. They are like, yep, absolutely. I do want to say one thing. I'm a big fan of, we're joking around about doing touristy things, but, you know, I'm kind of a lover of that. Like, I went to Boston, I had to go to Cheers. I mean, that was just something that you got to do, right? You know, when I'm going out to the West Coast, when I'm out in Seattle, you know, I plan on flying with Ken Moore, and I have nowhere to go. I just want to go for riding experience going up with Ken Moore. And I really think for those listening, you should put Cape Air on that list of bucket list adventure things. Even if you don't need to go to Nantucket or Rockland or something like that, go do it. It's a cool experience. I can't recommend it enough. And, you know, and it's supporting sort of our level of aviation. I mean, our interest of aviation. It's not, you know, jumping on a Delta flight or something like that. It's a completely different experience. So I highly recommend you do it and go support those touristy places, because it, you know, that's fun. It was kind of like a road trip in the air, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and, you know, of course I don't have to tell you, Chris, it's a beautiful part of the country.
Absolutely
I don't have
is.
To tell you that, Dave. It's very, it's very near to dear to me out here in Wisconsin still, but, and also supports all the folks who live out there. I mean, they're a year round residents of places like the Cape and the Islands. That we absolutely rely on Cape Air as their lifeline. I mean, there are transplant patients that have to get into Boston, you know, on a moment's notice, things like that, that can only do it because of aviation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dave, I want to say thank you for coming on. Thank you for spending time with us. I know we're talking about having you come on as a speaker. I can't wait for that. And I just want to say also thank you to all of your staff and crew and pilots at Cape Air for going out there every day and doing what they do, because it's an awesome experience to see you guys in action. You truly are an inspirational company.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, Chris, Tom, this was awesome. This was a really, really cool opportunity.
Well, thank you so much, and we can't wait to see you soon.
Yeah. Sounds good, guys.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
And and thanks to everybody listening. Thanks to our sponsor, Crew Chief Systems. And we'll catch you next time when you are cleared to land on the Green Dot.